Coming to you from Scandinavia, Sweden to be more specific. It's good to talk to you today. Please take a look at our website, redicecreations.com, for more radio, stream or download, no commercial interruptions. We have RSS feeds, iPhone apps and a number of ways you can get our program. Sign up for our newsletter and sign up for a membership to get full access. Don't forget to follow our news section. We also have TV programs, webcasts, video interviews, commentary and much more for you on the website. We cover a wide variety of topics that we find interesting and important, and if you feel we're missing something, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Today we have Bob Frisell with us. He's a teacher of 30 years whose books are regarded as underground spiritual classics. Maybe you've heard about his title, Nothing in This Book Is True, but it's exactly how things are. Bob is a qualified and authorized facilitator of Flower of Life research. He teaches the Merkaba meditation, sacred geometry, and breath of life rebirthing, along with other heart-opening techniques. He was trained by Leonard Orr, the rebirthing pioneer, and by Drunvalo Melchizedek, the originator of the Merkaba and unity breath meditations. Today we're going to discuss the window of 7 to 10 years of drastic changes that Bob sees beginning now in 2012, and how we're moving from the third dimension into the fourth. Our current type of consciousness is something we've been immersed in for the last 13,000 years, and according to Bob, a new type of consciousness is now rising. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio, Bob. Very nice to talk to you today. Thank you for taking the time to be on our program. How are you today, Bob?
Well, thank you for having me, Henrik, and I'm doing fine, and I hope you are too. So,
excellent.
Here we go.
All things considering, I guess there's a lot of things unraveling today. A lot of issues and problems, but some positive signs here and there as well. And obviously, we're going to get into some of this stuff here today. And I mean, just to kind of get things going here a little bit. 2012, Bob. Personally, I can't wait for the year to be over so we can move on and talk about something else.
But granted,
it's a social phenomena now. It's a spiritual phenomena. It is related to everything that is unfolding in one way or another. It has been talked so much about this year, and we're right in it right now, or we're entering into it obviously right now. And some of the things I'd like to ask you about is pertaining to 2012. You're recently featured in a new book about the subject matter, and obviously I feel you have a lot of things to say about it overall though. But how do you see the year unfolding, Bob?
Boy. Good question. Big question. What I see, Henrik, is not necessarily the year 2012 itself, rather a 7 to 10 year window. And we're right in the middle of that window where obviously tremendous changes are in process of happening. So there's a lot of places we can go to take a deeper look at that, and I kind of suspect that we will. But when I speak of a window, a 7 to 10 year window, one of the points that I make in my new book is the idea that the Hopis have been bringing forth for quite some time now, you know, roughly about 200 years, Hopi prophecies. And so this is what they say. They are in complete agreement with the Mayans. And they go on to say that you can pretty well count on the fact that on the exact date of December 21st, 2012, nothing really significant will happen. You can almost take that to the bank, if I understand them correctly.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, but here again, what they're saying is that we're right in the midst of this window where nothing less than, according to the Hopi, the movement will be from the fourth world to the fifth world.
The fourth world to the fifth world. I've heard this many, many different times. And what does this mean to you? How are you envisioning this transition? And how will this manifest itself on our level, on our dimension, do you think, Bob?
Yeah, a lot of groundwork that probably needs to be laid before we can really begin to look at this. Perhaps we could start by just speaking a little bit about dimensional worlds. we have to have some understanding of the fact that there's many, many different worlds here, and they're all separated by wavelength. They're all literally in the space, in the very room in which you are sitting right now. They're all interconnected, they're all linked together, and the only difference between one and the next one is wavelength. So wavelength is really the key here. And when I talk about wavelength, if people who've been in physics for any length of time pretty much, I think, agree at this point that wavelength really is the key. It's not frequency or anything like that. So if you look at our reality, our universe, and by that I mean if you are, well, if you had access to the Hubble, for example, you could get a pretty good insight as to the macrocosm. It's huge. And then there's much more to it. There's the microcosm, and then there's the world in which we live. So all of that is just one universe, and but it's only one of many. When we speak of wavelength, the wavelength of the universe in which we inhabit is about 7.23 centimeters long. And as you move up the dimensional scale, the wavelength becomes shorter, the vibratory rate and the frequency becomes much, much higher. So from the perspective of the big picture, this seems to be what's happening. Now, the Mayans and the Hopi speak of moving from the fourth world to the fifth world, and we're speaking of moving from the third dimension into the higher overtones of the fourth dimension. Really, we're saying the same thing when you consider that the Hopis consider the voidness from which all of this came as a place, and we don't. When I say we, primarily, I'm speaking of the ascended masters and levels of Melchizedek and there. But when you realize that the void is counted as a world with regard to the Hopis, then basically we're saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what this means then is that we're in process of moving from one dimensional world to another, to a much, much higher vibratory rate where basically being on that level is in a light body. They, if they appeared at this level, would have the ability to walk right through the walls.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about this in the context, as you mentioned as well, of overtones, obviously, comparing it to musical notes, much in the way where we can imagine the notes on a piano, what have you. We obviously have microtones, in between this as well. But one thing that occurred to me when I heard you talk about this is the notes can also, if you will, influence each other. They can begin to bleed over almost in one sense. They can cause sympathetic resonance or even dissonance with each other, depending on how strongly they resonate individually. And for some reason, I couldn't help to think about that. This could be an explanation of how the crossing over would be, if we're talking from a fourth world then, or into a fifth, or if we even have dimensional overlaps occurring, that there seems to be some kind of bleed through almost happening.
Comments
on that, Bob. Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. Maybe we need to lay a little bit more groundwork here in order for this to become more clear.
Absolutely.
Let me just say that. If you look at quantum physics, you realize that every object can be looked upon either as particles or as sound, which is wavelength. And furthermore, every particle or every piece of matter has its own sine wave signature, which is similar to like a handwriting signature. It just defines it. So the dimensional worlds now, when you realize that you can look at everything as waveform, they are separated by wavelength in exactly the same way as the notes are on a musical scale. So if you take a moment to look at a piano keyboard and take an octave from C to C, obviously there's the eight white keys, but there's also the five black keys, and you put the two together and you've got the 13 notes in the chromatic scale. Really, it's just 12 notes, because the 13th note would be the return note. But What you have here then, in dimensional terms, separated by wavelength in exactly the same way as the notes are on the musical scale, but in addition to that, you've got spaces in between. I mean, everything is holographic. The universe is holographic. Dimensional terms, it's all holographic. So in music, in between any two notes, you've got these things called overtones. Same is true in dimensional worlds. In fact, there's 12 of them. And each of these 12 overtones is a dimensional world just as vast as this one. So 12 times 12 gives you 144 dimensional worlds, and that's only one octave. We're sitting here on the third dimension. We're in process of moving into either the 10th, 11th, or 12th overtone of the fourth dimension. Now, to get down to your question, Henry, this is not something that's going to be happening in the indeterminate future. You know, you might ask the question, why now? Why not a million years from now? We can look at the why now, but for now, let me just say it is happening now. And my sense of it is, it's, well, let's put it this way. It's pretty obvious to everybody that these are rather dramatically accelerated times. And we know that in many ways we're moving out there really fast. But one way of looking at it, my preferred way of looking at it, is this dimensional. The dimensional worlds are beginning to interface. And that's my sense of it. And if that's true, well, what that means then is that you've got an enormous amount of higher vibratory energy, i.e. fourth dimensional energy, that's now interfacing with the third dimensional world. And what it's doing is it's creating a simple yet very powerful displacement process. It's stirring things up. Not that there's anything wrong with that, because when you learn to align with the stirring up, then you begin to realize that in alignment, you are in the midst of a very powerful healing process. So there's a lot that needs to be healed in order for us to successfully move from one dimensional world to another. I mean, obviously, you know, we're still immersed in wars and separation and, you know, go on and on with that.
There's a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, that's right. There's so much stuff going on, obviously, in terms of, in one sense, the downfall, if you will, of the old system. I think we can see it. Everyone who has their eyes open anyway and choose to have them open instead of, you know, shutting them because of fear or what have you, can see that something is up in that sense. What do you think, if we compare it, and I've heard you do this as well, and many others, of course, that this is like a dial, obviously, on a TV or on a radio. We can choose to tune in to different frequencies. They're all there and they share the same space. But depending on where we tune it, we get a channel basically, and we can hear it coherently. But what if they're now then blending, as you said, in that sense? That's causing static, the stirring up that you mentioned. This is causing none of the channels to currently be clear, if you will. Will this level out? Will this settle down again, do you think, Bob? Or are we in it for good now? What's going to happen here, do you think?
No, it will settle down. As I say, when you understand it, when you look at it from the context of the big picture, you begin to see something quite differently. And let's just take a minute and take a look at that. So important to understand that we are so immersed in polarity consciousness and have been for about 13,000 years. And by polarity consciousness, I mean we experience ourselves in this separate state. In other words, we're looking out at a world of which we don't really get that we're a part of it. And it's created some rather huge problems. I mean, when you don't get that you are one with all life everywhere, then you tend to treat your planet, your very mother, as though in this separate state that it's something to be conquered and something to be controlled and to be exploited rather than to be shared for the highest good for all. And, you know, just look at the environmental problems and you begin to see exactly what I'm talking about here. So we need to learn that there's a larger truth here. Perhaps one way of looking at it is to recall what Einstein said, and that is that you cannot solve your problems with the same level of consciousness that created them. So if we continue to remain in this state of separation, the possibility for solving our problems are somewhere between slim and none. Obviously, there's a change in consciousness that needs to occur, and the good news is it is occurring. And that is that we're beginning to move out of separation and into unity. So when you speak of unity consciousness, what you're now speaking of is the fact that no matter how good nor how bad it might seem, there's only one spirit. There's only one spirit moving through all life on all the different levels, and, you know, a little easier to see when a good event is happening, that it's a function of the one spirit. Not quite so easy to see when it's a function of the dark side. But if we can step out of separation long enough to notice that it's not what it appears to be, the whole thing is being orchestrated from a much higher level, and in that setting, the dark and the light are actually working together, serving as timing agents. So when your stuff gets stirred up in the context of unity, that's not a bad thing. That's a healing in process. And you get the healing by learning to align with, by learning to harmonize on an energetic basis rather than resist what's going on. And the end result of that is called integration. Transmutation, translation, transformation are other names for it too. And this is where we're headed. So instead of resisting the stirring up, if you will, we need to learn to align with it and realize that there's something else going on here. The darkness needs to be stirred up in order for the possibility of the greater possibility to come in, and that's the light of the higher dimensional worlds. Does that help a little bit, make a little bit of sense?
It does, and I've always been interested of asking, as you said before as well, why now? Maybe we can talk about the mechanics of this a little bit, if you will.
Yeah, good. That's real good. In order to do that, we need to take a look at one of the motions that the Earth makes. Obviously, we know that Mother Earth is tilted on her axis about 23.5 degrees, gives us our four seasons. But not as well known is the fact that the axis itself is in a wobble. It's a very slight wobble. It only changes 1 degree every 72 years. Every 2,160 years, it changes the viewpoint of one constellation. And every 25,920 years, approximately, let's just say 26,000 years, it makes one complete cycle, and it traces an elliptical pattern if you could see it. You know, if you could just look at the night sky from the North Pole for 26,000 years, if you had nothing better to do than to do that, you would see this elliptical pattern. So it's this 26,000-year cycle that really, when you understand it, explains a lot in terms at least of asking the question, you know, why now? It's called the precession of the equinoxes. And it's been studied for a long, long time. Mainly the Hindus and the Tibetans in ancient times were very interested in this. And what they noticed, well, a couple things. One is that we're moving in a counterclockwise direction. And at one point in this cycle, we are closest to the center of the galaxy. At the other point, obviously, we're furthest away. That when we turn the corner and start moving away from the center of the galaxy, and what they've noticed is that when we get about 900 years away from the center of the galaxy, that we just go to sleep. I mean, we are in the dark or in the asleep cycle for 13,000 years as we're turning away from the center. And then what they've also noticed is that about 900 years removed from the furthest point from the center of the galaxy, we start waking up. Well, all this talk about December 21st, 2012, what it means is that that's the exact moment when we hit the bubble, if you will, 900 years removed, 13,000 years removed from going to sleep, and we start to wake up. But not just start to wake up, I mean, we're waking up fast, dramatically so.
So, sorry to interrupt, but the changes that we are going through and these cycles of our rise and fall, if you will, to put it in a simple term, is completely driven by our position and angle in the galaxy.
Well, it sure explains a lot. It seems to be so that this 26,000-year cycle basically is it determines a lot. So when you hit one of these two points, 13,000 years apart, there is a shift in consciousness. Obviously, if you go to the asleep state, we're going to fall a bit in consciousness. But then when we hit the awake state, we're going to grow in consciousness, and that's exactly what we're doing. Now, there's more, and that is that obviously, that's a time of tremendous change with regard to consciousness, but it's also a time of tremendous change with regard to the physical nature of things, the ultimate expression of which is nothing less than the pole shifting. So we're right at that time right now where these major events are going to occur and are occurring.
Pole shift, magnetic, a physical pole flip, which one are we talking about here?
Both.
Both at the same time, huh?
Yeah. Not necessarily at the same time, but very closely timed together. They can happen at the same time, but what usually happens first is the magnetic pole shift. And if you've noticed anything about the Earth's magnetic field, it's been going down dramatically.
That's right. It's racing towards Russia. There's a lot of reports about weird magnetic anomalies the last few years here, actually.
Yep, there sure have been, and the adventure continues. So if you take a look at the magnetic anomalies, you can go back, maybe 30 years or so, and you can begin to see that the migratory patterns of birds began to be significantly disrupted. You know, they thought that they were following the migratory, the magnetic fields, but they would find themselves in strange new places. And same is true for trying to land airplanes. And magnetic maps had to be changed. This is big time stuff.
We've had, and I don't know the mechanics of why this would occur during the New Year's. I know that the celebration is obviously tied to a celestial event. This is why humanity has placed the New Year's on this particular day. But around the New Year's now, for the last two, maybe even 3 years, we've had very many strange things happening about birds falling out of the sky, fish stranding. We have, whales and other sea creatures kind of beaching themselves. Weird things like this. Do you think it's connected to the magnetics changing, basically?
Certainly the whales beaching themselves is, the birds falling out of the sky. I don't know about that. I'd be a little bit suspicious that HARP might have something to do with that.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's always that. Yeah, there's always that.
Don't really want to go there with HARP, though.
Well, it's another factor that is interesting in all this, of course, but we will hold off on that for now then, Bob. I want to ask you how you think that this will then affect people. If we look at it from the point of view of what's happening to some of the animals, it seems obviously not too positive from our point of view. Will this affect people differently, depending on where we are individually, maybe in our lives? What do you think? What do you make of it?
Yeah, everybody's going to be and is being affected by it. Before I talk about that, Henrik, though, let me just say something here. This discussion could easily bring up some fear in people, but I don't want to do that because there's something else going on here, and I don't really think that we're going to have a violent shifting of the poles this time like history tells us we have in the past. And what I mean by that is that if you do any of the research on pole shifting, you begin to quickly discover that since you're looking at surface winds of about 1,000 miles an hour and entire continents moving up and down, that's a rather major event. but I don't think it's going to play out that way this time. I think that we are in the midst, right literally in the middle, of the most unique ride from one dimensional world to another that life has ever seen. So I just would like to help us and everyone listening to just relax a little bit, and maybe we can see this as a smooth ride.
Okay, well, now, and why is that, do you think, then? How is this different this time?
Boy, that is a huge, huge question, and it's going to take some time to get there. Maybe we can just slowly work our way in that direction.
Sure.
But I forgot the question you asked me. Do you remember what it was?
Well, we were talking basically about why or how this will affect people, if it will affect them differently, basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah, our emotional stability is tied directly to the stability of the Earth's magnetic field. Now, look at the phenomenon of the full moon. And if you look at the, if you go to any police blotter and take a look at the increased crime rate of the day before, the day of, and the day after the full moon, you'll get a sense of what I mean. And I've talked to people in law enforcement. A few have come and taken my workshops, and they have confirmed what I'm just saying here, that absolutely that is true. And so... But what we're talking about here with the Earth's magnetic field doing what it's doing, it's more like a full moon becoming bigger and brighter, not just, one day, one evening a month, but almost like every night. So people are being affected emotionally. You know, you can pretty much ask anybody, is it more difficult for you to keep things together emotionally now than it was maybe 5, 10, or 20 years ago? And you get pretty general agreement on that. I mean, there's other factors that might come into play if you've been, if you've lost your job or your home or factors like that too. But still, the magnetic field is a major factor in all of this, I would submit.
Would you say, Bob, though, that obviously the economic situation, this is a big factor to all of this, but how about the point of view that these changes that we're seeing in society, the greater cycles, if you will, that we experience in society, are also driven by an underlying factor, which might be, well, to the society at large in a way, we're largely unconscious of it, right?
Everything is tied together here. Usually when you reach this point in the procession, things start to break down. Now, you could make a pretty good case for the fact that things are breaking down, you know, economically and just about any way that you want to look. War is going on all over the place. You could make the case for the fact that things are breaking down. But I don't want to get too carried away with that, again, because there is something else going on here. The breaking down aspect of things, first of all, is nothing compared to what it could be. The other side of that is we're keeping things together relatively well compared to what it could be. But here again, I just want to emphasize that in the larger picture here, this breaking down is absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
In other words, there's an old world that is dying and a new world that simultaneously is being born. Yes, things are getting stirred up, but here again, everything is a function of consciousness, and we need to learn that it's time for us to start stepping out of the separation thing and into the larger pictures, and that's the interconnection that we have to all life everywhere. And so in that context, then you begin to see this cycle in completely different ways. In other words, instead of it being a bad or a dangerous thing, it is the necessary healing in process. And yes, it is affecting us all, but the, you might say, plus side of this is that when you learn to catch the ride, in other words, when you learn to harmonize with the increased energetic aspect of things rather than to resist it, then you realize that you have the power and the ability to integrate or to transmute those very things that you've been putting up with or trying to change in some way, fighting or resisting, and it now becomes, it now becomes your ally in this in this process. So this is a healing that we are all in process of learning to align with.
I've always been interested in the question if everyone is both intended and can and will go through certain set of changes and to say improvements might be, you know, the wrong word here, but mm-hmm. basically what I'm trying to get to is when I look around and try to get a general feel for people around me, both in this country and others, as I'm out traveling and so forth, I see a large majority, it seems like, completely shut down, shut off, in almost in a fear mode. They're just rushing around. They're not really conscious of anything, and it's almost like I can see a lot of people being turned into zombies. And in some cases, I can blame them individually, perhaps. In other cases, I feel almost sorry for them for the amount of you know, shit. Sorry for the term, but they have to, you know, take basically as they're going through this particular period right now. Will everyone go through it and make it, if you know what I mean, Bob?
Oh, boy, that's a good question and a huge question. First of all, I agree with you completely that the masses are, let's put it this way. The more you try and cling to the old ways, you know, this is not the 1950s, but the more you try and cling to the old ways, the more you're resisting the changes that are happening. And whatever you resist will only persist. In fact, it'll become much more intense. The other side of that is learning to harmonize, learning to cooperate, energetically speaking, with what's going on. Is everybody on the planet going to get it? I don't see how. But what we're speaking of is not 7 billion people that's necessary to facilitate these changes. What it is a critical mass. You know, it's the old 100th monkey thing, and that's the good news. And so that's my focus. And is the creation of this critical mass.
Yeah, and so are we're not talking about the majority then, that's to make that clear. Is that correct?
No, a very small minority. In fact, somewhere in the neighborhood probably of about 7 to 10%. And so when you focus on that, then you can begin to see that some really good things are happening, and it's happening quite quickly.
So 7 to 10%, so we're talking about let's see, what is that? In the high number, about 700 million people, though. That's quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and depending on how you define critical mass, which actually I believe in these enormously accelerated times is basically being recreated and redefined probably on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So where it's all leading is hard to say, but at some point, this whole critical mass thing, what you do is you create a whole that's greater than the sum of the parts. And this is not just theory or just wild-eyed speculation or whatever. I mean, this is pretty hardcore stuff. If you go back, certain studies have been taken on this. Transcendental meditation people, for example, probably way back in about the 60s or 70s, looked at this very issue. And what they noticed is that a certain amount of people, a certain percentage of people meditating, of course, using the TM method on a regular basis, had a corresponding rippling effect throughout the entire area. So people maybe didn't know, but they were being affected by it. So this critical mass thing is real stuff. The 100th monkey story, nobody knows for sure how many monkeys it was, but at one point, this one extra monkey started washing his or her sweet potato, and bingo, they all get it.
That's funny. Well, that's encouraging, I guess. How quick do you think that this will go, then? If we're making a journey here towards the other end now, then, of the processional cycle that we're on, are we talking still about hundreds of years? Are we talking about just a few? What do you think?
well, if this information is accurate, we're right in the middle of a window that is somewhere, as best I can tell, between about 7 to 10 years. However, it's hard to say just exactly how large that window is, but it is fair to say that we're right in the middle of it. And so, putting this all together, what it seems to be adding up to is nothing less than a shift in dimensions. In other words, a shift in wavelength. So we move our conscious wavelength to a much, much higher vibratory rate, fourth dimension, if you will. And along with that, we start moving out in ways that are pretty much at this level of awareness beyond our ability to imagine. But what, if this is true, is about to happen is more than good. It's fantastic.
You know, Bob, I when I talk to a lot of people too, that I get the sense, and me included sometimes, that you get kind of frustrated in everything. You see how things are continuing to break down, but the release, if you will, is not really happening. Do you think that we're in a time right now too where these, you know, 7 to 10 years that you're talking about will be continued to be, you know, pushed ahead almost in a sense? I mean, haven't we heard about this for, 30 years now, at least from the New Age community, and especially then in the last 10 years or so, this has kind of taken off with focus around 2012. But is there a delay in the implementation? Are we struggling to kind of make it in a sense? Or are we time optimists, I guess I'm asking, in a sense?
I see it a little bit differently. I think that we're being given an opportunity, a very unique opportunity, to make a transition from one level of awareness into another level of awareness, i.e. dimensional shift, in a way that most of life is not given. And perhaps one way of looking at this is that sometime around the turn of the century, Mother Earth maybe did go into the fourth dimensional world, but in so doing, I'm just putting this out as a possibility, Henry, and the possibility is that if this is true, what Mother Earth did was create the new world that looks exactly like the old world. Why? To give us time to transition from one world, from one way of being into another. These changes, when they do happen, are going to be dramatic. I do believe that there will come a day, and it could happen any day, because when these changes happen, it happens in the space of about 20 hours. I do believe that the day will come when we will transition into a fourth dimensional world in a way that we will absolutely know that this is a new world. But in the meantime, we've created a world, a new world that looks exactly like the old one, to give us time, you might say, to learn the rules of the game. Now, the most fundamental rule of the game is recognizing that you and I are creating our reality 100% all the time, not just some of the time. And that, in other words, what we think, what we feel, and how we interact with life is totally determining our experience of our reality. So that's real important, no matter what dimensional level you're on. But, you know, in this asleep state for the past 13,000 years, on this third dimensional level, we've kind of gotten away by, you know, playing stupid, pretending that, well, we're just victims in this whole thing. We don't really have much power, and all the authority and all the power lies outside of ourselves. None of it resides within, yet nothing could be further from the truth. Now, when we get to the fourth dimension, to a fourth dimensional world where nobody can deny that that's what it is, the manifestation is instant. In other words, whatever you think, whatever you feel is the instantly manifested reality. So the time delay has been completely removed. Well, what that means is that if you're in harmony with your world, you know, thinking and feeling thoughts like love and truth and beauty and trust and harmony and peace, you're instantly going to create a world that's reflective of that. But on the other hand, if your fear thoughts take over, your limiting thoughts take over, then you're instantly going to create a world that's reflective of that. Well, the same is true here, too. It's just that there's this little time delay, and here again, you know, not nearly every one of us has gotten the message. So many people, in fact, the vast majority, are still deeply immersed in powerlessness, in victim consciousness. Mm. But that's changing, and it's changing quickly.
Well, that's interesting. If the fourth dimension, then, is about, well, if we could call it manifestation, basically, in one sense, then, what's running the show? Is it the masses or is it the individual? Meaning, if I live my own life, kind of, you know, in that sense, then, in a bubble compared to what the masses are doing, and I feel everything is good and happy for me, am I still affected then? If the masses are in a major fear mode and being, you know, programmed by the mass of the government machine out there, if you know what I mean?
On the fourth dimensional level, anyone who's still at the effect of their fear and limiting thoughts simply will not be able to stay there. They'll be taken back to the third dimensional world from which they came. So here again, this is a much higher vibratory rate universe, the fourth dimension, a much shorter wavelength. And so here again, it's, you know, basically the beings on that level would appear here as light beings. And so you must be in harmony with your world in order to stay there. And it's a world in which the fear, in which the darkness, in which the limitation simply cannot survive.
Hmm. So is this like a window of opportunity that eventually will close, do you think? Or again, will we see a fluctuation back and forth, maybe, depending on how people might learn to gauge this a little bit and get the sense of it, or how do you see
it
happening here?
Definitely, it is a window of opportunity. And so it's incumbent upon us to use the time to do whatever we can to raise our awareness, raise our consciousness, and fundamental to that is recognizing that whether you fully understand it or not, you and I, everyone and everything, is intimately connected to the whole. There's only one spirit moving through all of life, and you cannot separate the whole from any aspect of itself. And so the same is true for us. The spark, the spirit of oneness moves through everyone and through everything. So in that context, life begins to look a little bit differently. You know, mm-hmm. We are, well, what can I say? It's a different world.
So if we talk about this in the context of our history, of our, you know, forgotten history in one sense, there are some records, legends, and myths, of course, but what you're saying as well, just to emphasize that again, there's no comparison that what we're going through now to the catastrophe, if you will, of what happened 13,000 or so years ago. Is that correct?
Well, certainly if you look at our history, you begin to realize that during the time of Atlantis, and by the way, it really was there, and in Lemuria before that, we were in a form of unity consciousness where we didn't experience ourselves and didn't experience life as we do now in this separate state. So we've been there before. One simple way of looking at this is that we're just going back home, but we're doing it in an upgraded manner from anything that we ever lived or ever experienced in the past. What happened 13,000 years ago is when we reached this point in the precession where the poles do shift, and they did, and the consciousness shifted, and it did. It was not a positive change. We went from a much higher level of awareness, basically in free fall, until we landed, basically crash landed down here on this dark, dense aspect of the reality, all as a result of massive misuse of power in Atlantis about 16,000 years ago. So that's what caused us to fall 3,000 years later.
It's a very interesting story, the myth of Atlantis, and it could be, I've always feel in one sense that it's comparative to the epoch, the era that we're going through right now as well. Again, there's this window of opportunity of maybe going in another direction. In one sense, what I've heard and what I feel is that the Atlantis civilization didn't do that. But what about the Earth changes that we are going through right now then? Do you think that these will get worse, or have we seen the worst of it by now?
I think that, again, well, if you look at prophecies, you could look at Edgar Cayce, who prophesied a shifting of the poles sometime around the turn of the century. The Hopis were saying pretty much the same thing. Modern-day futurists, a man by the name of Gordon Michael Scallion, was saying exactly the same thing around the turn of the century, and perhaps numbers of other people, too. Yet we're still here, you know?
Yeah.
The changes that these people have prophesied have not happened. And this is what I mean when I say I really believe that we are in the midst of, let's call it the ride from one world to another. My sense of it is that we're having the most unique experience that life has ever had, where there will not be a violent shifting of the poles. There will not be the 1,000-mile-an-hour surface winds and entire continents moving up and down. There will be earthquakes and weather phenomenon. There is. But, you know, that's rather mild compared to what it could be. And it's 2012, and we're still here.
We're still here, exactly. That's again, I feel a lot of this have been, well, we've talked about this before with other guests in the context of catastrophobia of Barbara Hanclough primarily, that this is also a memory that we all have in both genetically and maybe even in our subconscious mind, that we're fearful of the end of the world, of this doomsday, because we all have a kind of a memory in one way or another of it, and we might be feeling that we're in the same era, but as you know, we've always seen doomsdayer and the end is nigh kind of people throughout history, and the question is, are we here with that again now, just in 2012? But we have just simply more people talking about it. Well, now we have the internet as well, of course, so the broadcasting of this is even more is more dramatic, if you know what I mean, Bob.
Yeah. Well, 13,000 years ago, it was a catastrophe. Atlantis and most of the inhabitants on Atlantis sank to the bottom of the ocean. There were a few conscious survivors, but not many. But I don't think it's going to play out that way at all this time. First of all, last time, 13,000 years ago, was not a positive shift. It was a negative shift from a high level to a low level. But we're going back up this time, and here again, I think it's, relatively speaking, a very gentle ride.
I want to continue talking more with you here in our next segment in a little while. I want to ask you more about both Atlantis and also some of the traditions that we have from the past coming out, connecting to Egypt, Thoth. You have some interesting stuff about the Merkaba, and we can go once more back to some of the number symbolism and what have you. So much more to discuss, obviously, and as well what the fourth dimension really more how this will implement itself, perhaps. But before we do that, though, let's talk a little bit about your website and also some of the titles and so forth you have out there. Your flagship, if you will, book out there is Nothing in This Book is True, but It's Exactly How Things Are. It recently had its 15th anniversary recently, and you have some new titles out there as well. Go ahead and mention some of these, Bob.
Okay. Well, you're right. Nothing in This Book is True. That's the main book. And the 15th anniversary is literally a new edition. I decided that it was either time to write a new book or to rewrite Nothing, and I chose the latter. So I pretty much just started over and rewrote the book and brought it up to date and added tons of new information. It's pretty much the source for most of what we're talking about here. And you'll find that it is available on my website at bobfrizzell.com. My other books, Something in This Book is True, is the sequel to Nothing. And the third book, You Are a Spiritual Being, Having a Human Experience. Well, that speaks to the unity of being, which I really do feel is the perhaps single most important bit of information that I came across. And everything else just fell into place when I really got this idea of unity, of oneness. So that's what spiritual being is talking about. Then I also have the new book, Transforming Through 2012, where I've collaborated with 32 other authors, each of us giving our sense of the times that we're in. And uh, you, pretty much got a take on my feel of it.
That's right. Your website is bobfrisell.com, and we will have this linked up on redaskreations.com as well, and people can just click in into the store right there, and you have the titles right there as well. So that's excellent. Anything else you want to mention now before we wrap things up here then for the first segment, Bob?
Well, if you go to my website, you can also see the two workshops I give. Both are weekend workshops. One is called The Flower of Life, and the other one is called The Breath of Life. And essentially what we're doing in these two workshops is, in many ways, paralleling the ancient Egyptian mystery schools, where the initiate would first spend 12 years in a school called the Left Eye of Horus. Basically, the left eye, because it's controlled by the right brain, is the focus on emotional healing. This is what we do in the Breath of Life and in the Flower of Life. In a sense, we're recreating the other school known as the Right Eye of Horus. And in the Right Eye of Horus, the initiate, way back in ancient Egypt, would spend another 12 years primarily using the language of sacred geometry, a language that is known everywhere throughout the cosmos, and also a language that can be used to talk about anything, which makes it particularly useful in showing the left brain, the part that is really stuck in separation, that there's only one creation pattern. There's only one image through which everything in this created reality came through. Well, that's a fundamental step in showing the left brain the unity of being. So this is what we do in the Flower of Life. And then in addition to that, we also teach the Merkaba, the living Merkaba field, which ultimately is a, you might say, a tool of ascension, enabling one to take your body, turn it into a ball of light, and travel from one world to another, which could be kind of useful if this dimensional shift stuff is actually real.
Very interesting. This is some of the things I want to ask about in the next segment as well, so do stay with us. We have much more to talk about. But again, then the website is bobfrisell.com. Head on over there and take a look at all the material that he has up there for you. Excellent. Stay with us, Bob. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us into the second hour as we continue to discuss synthetic consciousness, ascension, the Merkaba with Bob Frisell. He shares his insights on how the Great Pyramid was used as an ascension tool to experience the five stages of consciousness at a time when this was not accessible. The Egyptians allegedly had the knowledge to synthetically create unity consciousness to experience the fourth dimension. We talk about the Hall of Records and evidence for a super advanced civilization here on Earth. Bob mentions the role of ETs and why they've been experimenting on humans. We'll talk about working with the Merkaba and the importance of emotional healing to find your true self nature. Bob also stresses the importance of the remembering process and stepping into the greater picture. Towards the end, we talk about the energy field or grid 60 miles over the planet Earth, which Bob says was synthetically made to help us. He'll tell us how it corresponds with consciousness. Very interesting continuation here coming up that you shouldn't miss with Bob Frisell. Sign up for a membership if you're not already a member. It's only 5 euros per month. Continue listening to this second hour or any of our previous programs. Check out our 3-month recurring subscription option. We also have other one-time payments going from 3 months up to 2 years, and you can use your credit card or PayPal account. This is a great gift to yourself or a friend, and of course you help support our efforts and continued productions. We're very excited about our upcoming programs with Mark Passio, Ashoria S., Carl Munk, Anthony Peake, Andrew Goff, Joseph Atville, Josh Reeves, Sonia Barrett, Dean Clifford, Barbara Henklau, Håkan Blomqvist, Paul Levy, Laird Scranton, and Dr. Louise Turi. So lots of interesting and important material coming up for you shortly. Next up now, Hour 2 with Bob Frisell. Thank you for staying with us.